Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
For Women's History Month, two leaders that have made a difference. We talked to the Secretary-Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers and a woman of steel. Welcome to the Monday, March 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two women on the show today. As you know, or hopefully you know by now, that March is Women's History Month. So joining us on the show today, we have two women, powerful women, I might add. Gay Henson, we're going to start things off with Gay. Gay was elected Secretary-Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, website ifpte.org. She was elected to that position in August of 2021 at the union's 60th convention. And before that, she served on the union's executive council as Eastern Federal Area VP, representing U.S. federal workers east of the Mississippi and focusing on the many issues facing those dedicated public servants. Her local union is the Engineering Association, EA, IFPTE Local 1937, which represents 2,500 white-collar workers at the Tennessee Valley Authority. She served as EA president from 2005 to 2022. And that membership, well, it includes engineers, scientists, technicians, IT professionals, program administrators, and operations support specialists. And by the way, TVA is the nation's largest public power provider, serving 10 million people. Her leadership of the EA has included successfully campaigning to stop the outsourcing and privatization of TVA IT workers' jobs during the pandemic. That happened right in the middle of the pandemic. And she did that by engaging community partners and the union. At TVA, Gay is employed now in work management at the Sequoia Nuclear Station as a project control specialist. Her career includes many years as a health physicist providing radiation protection to workers, the environment, and the public. What an impressive background. Well, we're going to talk about her journey as a woman, how difficult it was. And she says, this is an unprecedented time in history for women in labor history. More women now hold powerful positions in labor than ever before. And she points out that labor has never been more supported and uplifted than by the efforts undertaken by the current administration. So all workers, she said, men and women, they're all benefiting right now. IFPTE.org is the website to go to. Our second guest on the show today is Keisha Burr. Now, Keisha is with the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce, along with the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Now, Keisha is an active member of Local 10-00086 in Norristown, Pennsylvania. I can't believe there's so many zeros in that local, but that's the local that she resides in. She serves as a Women of Steel coordinator for District 10 of the Steelworkers, and in that role, she has helped organize activities around the year, including a Christmas party for local families in need. She also volunteers at a local pantry and soup kitchen. Regarding Women of Steel, if you go to the USW website, read about the Women of Steel. We've talked about them on the show before. We've had various guests from the union, but essentially, Women of Steel are all sisters, regardless of industry or sector in which they are employed, and regardless of gender identity, race, age, and ability level. This is all posted from their constitutional convention, which took place 2 years ago. It was in 2022. And they point out that USW Women of Steel show their solidarity and sisterhood by standing together to advance women's equality across our diversity and to counter assaults on workers' rights, by volunteering for political and organizing activities, by running and volunteering for roles in their union and community, and by engaging in bargaining and corporate campaign struggles. Our union will use a call to action for women's equality document as a guide for our international, national, district, and local union work, with emphasis on the following: ending violence and sexual harassment against women and girls, women's health and safety at work, women's inclusion when planning and running events, programs, and policies, women in leadership roles, changing the channel on hatred, closing the gender wage gap, and standing with sisters around the world. That's what Women of Steel is all about. And Keisha Bird will talk about that and a whole lot more on the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Speaking of steelworkers, I love this story. Customers who purchase beer from Minnesota's August Shell Brewing Company are getting far more than just a high-quality, union-crafted beverage. In each case, buyers get a package of top-to-bottom USW-made products, including the beer, the boxes, the bottles, even the sand used to make the glass. Down the line, USW members ensure customers receive the highest quality merchandise on the market. Eric Stade is president of a local 11-118, and Eric says it all starts in the brew hall, and we follow it right on through to the package on the dock. Slade's local, which represents about 25 hourly workers at the Shell Brewing site in New Elm, again, we're talking in Minnesota, is one of four USW units involved in producing the contents of those cases of Shell beer. The others include local 1259, which makes boxes, local 129M, which produces bottles for Anchor Glass, and local 460G, which supplies the sand used in the glass-making process. All four are located in Minnesota. The Shell Brewery, the oldest brewery in the Midwest and the second oldest in the country, the company founded by German immigrant August Shell back in 1860, and it's still owned and operated by Shell's descendants. The company, on a regular basis, celebrates the heritage with annual Bockfest and Oktoberfest events while maintaining an on-site museum, which is open to the public and tells the colorful story of the brewery's history. You can find more on the national website of the USW, usw.org. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Gay Henson, Secretary Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Ironworkers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 ironworker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great ironworker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Ironworkers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one and welcome Gay Henson to the show. Now, we had her on probably about a year and a half ago, and that was with Matt Biggs. Matt is the president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Employees, and Gay serves as Secretary Treasurer. She was elected along with Matt in August of 2021 at the union's 60th convention. And before that, Gay served on the Executive Council of the Federation as Eastern Federal Area VP since 2012. And she is talking to us from Chattanooga, Tennessee today. And you'll definitely hear that Southern accent here in a minute. IFPTE.org is the website. And we're doing this interview because March is Women's History Month. And Gay, like many women, they're making history. And they belong on America's Workforce. Hey, Gay, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Hi, I'm doing really good. So good to hear from you again.
Good, good, good. You know what? Let's start off with your journey. We've since the last time you and Matt were on together, this show has really exploded. We had a 25% increase in audience from 22 to 23, and we're now in the top 1% of all podcasts. We worked hard to get to this level, and I know you worked hard to get to your level. Talk to me about your journey, because it's not easy. And being a woman, sometimes it's even more difficult. Can we start right there? Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I remember the first time that I thought, well, you know, I like that I'm in the union. I'm excited that I'm in a union. But I think I would like to be more active in my union. And that was a day, probably, I don't want to say how many years ago because it'll date me. But it was a long time ago that I was told in a meeting to sit down and shut up. I thought, well, no, I need to change this thing up. And it's time for me to get more involved. So I decided to run for my local rep, and I was a rep for many years, and then, you know, was a section president of a local out of, it's the Chattanooga-Tennessee Valley region. It's the Engineering Association Local 1937. And it is a union squarely in the right-to-work deep south. And but the company that we worked for, TVA, which is really a government agency, they're very pro-union. They believe in unions. So we had a great union, but outside of TVA, there wasn't much union growth in our region. You know, IBW is big down here. But anyway, I started out as that local rep and became the president probably somewhere around 2005, and was that for about 17 or 18 years. And I decided to get involved with the international after we had a couple really big fights with the TVA. And we weren't afraid to take on the big companies like TVA and to win. One of those big things was TVA was wanting to outsource a bunch of IT jobs and give the work to foreign workers. And right in the middle of COVID, when everybody's worried about a job and let them go. So we did that big fight. And then, you know, earlier on, we had a fight with TVA over the pension. But we weren't afraid. Our group was fearless and not afraid to take on the big companies and do what we thought was right. And through that, I catapulted to being involved at the international level, which I just love. I love working with Matt Biggs. He's a terrific leader. He's got a really great vision. And we just dovetail together very well. But he knows, I know, we share everything, and we partner in everything. And I guess I just want to say to women out there, don't be afraid to jump in. Don't just stick your toe in. Go ahead and jump. and you can do it. And it's not a better, there's no better time than now for it.
And if somebody tells you to sit down and shut up, well, do just the opposite, right?
Right, right. Stand up and make a ruckus. Yes.
I love it. I love it. Really good. Why don't you explain to our listeners a couple of things? I want to get into the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Association, and authority, I should say. And also, I want to start with the union, the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Can you give us a little deeper glimpse into that? Like I said, we got a lot of new listeners. They probably don't know exactly the background of the union and what you actually do.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we represent about 85,000 folks across the United States and Canada. We have a really, really big union in Canada. Several of them, but together, all together, probably about 10,000 members there, with the local 160, which is mostly power generation. And then we have NASA here in the United States, and we have Boeing, you know, which, you know, has had some struggles, and we love to try to help the workers and the company together overcome those struggles. We you know, represent the Navy and a lot of the federal sector. You know, federal government. It's just it's pretty broad. We have, you know, private sector, public sector, and the federal. And the biggest thing that we're kind of working on now is we're trying to make sure that the United States will be able to, one of our big pushes is energy. We want to make sure that we have, we'll get to net zero in a time and a place where the workers are protected and the jobs. We're also really worried a little. I say the word worried, but I don't want another word to use. AI concerns us quite a bit. Like, what will that do to impact the workers, especially workers like we have that are, you know, scientists, engineers, technician types across the country and Canada.
Yeah, I had a good conversation with Matt Biggs about AI, artificial intelligence, and especially you don't want AI being involved in national security issues. I mean, we have to make some separation there. That's another conversation. But I want to talk, you mentioned energy, and I'm reading that at the Tennessee Valley Authority, you're in management at, what is it, the Sequoia Nuclear Station?
I'm in work management, which is not the same thing as management. I work as a project control specialist, but my background is radiation protection. I'm a health physicist by trade. And so I would work to help them schedule things in a way that would save the most dose to the workers. So that's the job. Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's interesting. Work management. Okay. So, and I know your background, I guess you worked many years as a health physicist providing radiation protection to workers. Can you elaborate on that? I mean, I'm thinking of people, there's a lot of people working in that field. What kind of protections do we have today on that?
Yeah. Well, the number one priority of all the nuclear plants in the United States is to make sure that we keep the public safe, that we keep the equipment at the nuclear plant safe. And as a health physicist, that's what you do. You make sure that all the engineering controls are in place to keep the dose as low as possibly achievable to the workers that have to go in. And we've gotten that to really almost nothing when the people go in and do work. They're not picking up very much radiation, none to the general public, none to the atmosphere in the communities around. We use, shielding and distance and engineering controls, to keep that safe. And that was our main priority. And it is the same for every health physicist at every nuclear plant. You know, there's not a lot of health physicists around. There's a lot of health physics technicians, a few, and a lot of health physics physicists. But what happens is, you know, during the period of time whenever we didn't grow nuclear in the country, a lot of people didn't go and study that. And so we're building that back up now, and we've got like a whole new generation of people doing that kind of work. It's very exciting work. I mean, you know, if a plant has to go and shut down, say Sequoia Nuclear Plant had to shut down the plant to rebuild a pump. They have a shutdown regularly anyway to do maintenance. So you're rebuilding things. The health physicists and the health physics technicians would go and make sure that job was done as safely as possible and with no impacts to workers or the community or the plant equipment. So it's a very exciting job. Yeah.
That's what we want. We want that safety element in there. And I'll tell you, I've been in the radio field for a long time and now podcasting, but I remember like yesterday what happened at Three Mile Island, which was, 1979, I believe. And
yes.
Especially
yes.
During the 70s, boy, I'll tell you, there were many, many protests about nuclear power. We don't need this. It's not safe. They have a shelf life. It's not going to be good. But fast forward to today, there is a tremendous thirst for energy. So obviously, you know, your involvement in this, things have changed dramatically. The safety has improved dramatically. But in your opinion, nuclear power needs to be expanded in order to satisfy that thirst of energy in America today, Gay? Is that
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Without it, I don't know if we can meet the needs of the generation that we're currently in or the next generation. I mean, it's now time to start building, in my opinion, you know, small modular reactors and even some new big reactors. The small modular reactors is, you know, I know you probably know about them, but their technology, it's a new technology, you know, but, you know, a TVA is trying to take the lead on that in the United States, and they're trying to build, about 50 total small modular reactors that would be 300 megawatts apiece, starting with, you know, the first one and then duplicating and trying to do, you know, about 10 at a time in brownfields, places that can't be used for other things. Across the Tennessee Valley region, which is really exciting. Canada's doing the same thing. Canada has kind of leapfrogged us a little, and they're really going after it there. And their government is now, our Michelle Johnston, who's the leader at Local 160, and is also on our executive board, she's really pushing it, and she is pretty much, she and her, you know, friends of nuclear, which, you know, there's a doctor up there that's a medical doctor and several others that have just really pushed to say, what are we going to do if we don't do nuclear? If not nuclear, what? Because you can't get something out of nothing. If the wind's not blowing, you can't do anything with that. If the water's not flowing, you can't get anything. You can't make another river. We've got to do something if we're going to continue because, you know, we're still powering our stuff up at night now. That's the generation we live in now.
Yeah.
So it's not like, yeah. Yeah.
And when the lights go out, nobody's happy.
No, I know it.
Gay Henson joining us on our live line today. And I tell you, I love talking to her. She's Secretary Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Do check out their website, ifpte.org. And Gay is one of many women labor leaders that we're featuring on the show this month because March is Women's History Month. And Gay, like many of the women that we feature here on America's Workforce, well, she's making history. We'll be back in a few minutes right here on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information, America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Gay Henson. Gay is the Secretary-Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers, IFPTE.org, big presence in the United States and even a bigger presence in Canada. And we've been talking about America's thirst for energy, especially we're focusing on the Tennessee Valley Authority. Definitely want to stay on that issue because that's a big entity there. And by the way, Gay served as president of the Engineering Association of Local 1937. We're talking 2,500 white-collar workers at the Tennessee Valley Authority for some degree of time. And for the past, 2.5 years, going on 3 years, she's been Secretary-Treasurer of the National Union, the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Gay, I'd like to focus on March being Women's History Month. And, we've seen some strides in labor for men and women, people of color. It's been really good. We have a labor-friendly administration. I'd like to, dig into your brain here a little bit and talk about what's happening. Because this, to me, and I'm sure to you, it's an unprecedented time in our history for women in labor. What's your take on that?
Oh, yes. It's never been better than now for labor, not just in the United States, but in Canada as well. You know, there's Bea Brosk up in Canada. She's the president of the Canadian Labor Congress, and she has been. Now, she's going on her second term since, like, May of 2020, and she started out as a grocery clerk. So she started out as a union grocery clerk. She's been a lifelong union activist. She's a champion for workers. And guess what? She's a friend of mine. These people that are in charge now, these women labor leaders, they're not afraid to be accessible to everybody. I mean, I could call her up and talk to her. She would help me if I needed help on something. And all the, Liz Shuler's the same way. They're both very accessible. And they understand that in order for people to plug into the union movement and to be a part of it, that we have to be there for, you know, that they need to be there for us to kind of stand on their shoulders and get moving. And they're happy to do it. Liz Shuler, she's the president of the AFL-CIO. She was born to a lineman father. I think her mother, I can't remember, but I'm thinking her mother worked as a secretary. But she's been a union activist, you know, forever, at least since college. And she started out lobbying for IBEW, and then now she's the first woman to be elected and the youngest person to ever hold the office of at the president of the AFL-CIO, which is, 12.5 million workers here in the United States. And she's a friend. I mean, it's not often that you can call the top labor leader of the United States your friend, and not just a friend, but your friend is a woman. And it's just really unheard of. I mean, there's a couple other people, if you don't mind my saying, that I think are also very, remarkable. And that one of them is Cleola Brown. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she is the president of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. She's been that since 2004. And she's very instrumental. She was essential in basically connecting the labor movement with the civil rights movement through the years of her life. And then now in this role, and she's terrific, also a friend of mine. And then, Randy Weingartner, she has like 1.7 million teachers as part of the American Federation of Teachers. She's terrific. And a friend, somebody I can call on. In fact, you know, I guess it was November, but I was up in D.C., and we, you know, we had a nice lunch together to work on a project for STEM workers to include, you know, better curriculum in the schools and, you know, maybe some of these grants to help get STEM going for women and people of color, for everybody. But she's very innovative in her ways. So those are some terrific women leaders.
I'm glad you brought up Randy Weingarten. She's been on the show a number of times, and I have to reference the statement by the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Do you remember when he said she was the most dangerous? The most dangerous woman, not just in America, but in the world. where did that come from?
He didn't even say woman. I think he said she was the most dangerous person, period. I mean, I think he said something like maybe that she was close to Satan or something like that. I don't know. It was really awful. But no, she's a fine person, fine person.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because she's got a leadership position, he's afraid of her. I don't understand that comment, but I think there's far more dangerous people in the world that we can talk about on the show. But I'm glad you brought up Liz Shuler, though, because Liz made a statement. And you know what? I loved having Rich Trumka on the show. Rich passed away too suddenly, and he saw something in Liz, I think, that a lot of people, because he chose her to be his secretary treasurer at the AFL-CIO, and he saw something in her, and he was grooming her for the next leadership position. And sadly, that came too quickly there. But Liz has made a difference. And I'm just wondering here, you mentioned a couple of other female leaders, and I think at last count, there are like 16 female members, presidents of state AFL-CIO labor federations, which is pretty good and expanding. And I know some big ones, too, like Alaska, like California. California is huge. But what do you see down the road? I mean, this is the start of something big. Do you see this getting bigger, Gay?
I do. I think, you know, the more you give women, the more that women take or find their place in power, the more other women are willing to jump in and they see it and they go, okay, I can do that. I can do what Liz Shuler is doing or Bea Brusk or Michelle Johnson from Canada. You know, you can do it. Randy Weingarten. I mean, it's basically opened the door for people to see their potential they couldn't see before. And the way the women are approaching it, these leaders, I said it two or three times now, but I really mean it. They make themselves available, accessible, you know, for these people. And it's not like this pie in the sky thing that you can't achieve. It's like you get to know them and you know, wow, I can do that. I can do what they're doing. I want to be like them. And I think you're going to see more and more women jumping in because women really do care about all the same things that men do. And they're as capable in some places, more capable, but women have a great ability to look at all the finer details and then also see the big picture too. So there's some real potential. I think it's going to blow up. I think you're going to see twice as many women in large, powerful leadership positions going forward.
Well, Gay, to your point, we're seeing more and more women getting involved in their unions and rising to leadership positions like you becoming Secretary Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. What about in the political system? Because I think we're still seeing, especially with the policies, very, very male-dominated. And this is a two-part kind of conversation here. It's important for people that are involved in union leadership positions to get involved in the political process so they can change things for workers for the better, make it better for all workers in America. What's the game plan on that one? How do you feel about that moving forward, Gay?
Well, I tell you what, New Jersey's got a great program to help bring local people, just regular citizens, into how to run for office, how to make your voice heard. They have a program that I think really needs to be looked at stronger by everybody else. It's been going for years, and I think it can be duplicated. But, you know, women and people of color are jumping in there and running for office with the support. A lot of them are union leaders. Sometimes they're not. But, You know, I think the place to actually plant that seed is with the unions, because I think people in the unions do see, typically if you're a union member, you've seen how something political has affected you on a personal level or your family on the job. So you can see the connection better than sometimes the average person can. And so I think we got to grow that at the labor movement. I know that Liz Shuler's actively involved in doing that. I know our union tries to encourage members to run for office in any way they can, you know. But I think you got to see the connection of how it matters to you on a personal level, or maybe in your community, before you know that you really want to do that. I mean, and you know, it's a rough life as a politician. I mean, you're under fire all the time. But I think you're going to see a lot more union leaders come from the rank and file. Political leaders come from the rank and file of unions.
Yeah, we started something, especially with New Jersey, and I've referenced their program there on the show for many, many times here on America's Workforce. Well, Gay, we're just about out of time, but I love this quote that you sent me from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the U.S. Supreme Court, and she said, "Fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you." That really speaks volumes, and I assume that that's pretty much what you live by, Gay Hansen, right?
It is. You know, if you can't persuade somebody to see it your way, you can't explain it to them in a way that's meaningful for them. And if you care about it, you've got to figure out how to do that. Because if we can't move people in the direction that we need them to go and they need to go and help them understand why, we're not going to get anywhere. And so I think you have to just decide. In front of me every day, I have five or six issues that has to be determined. I have to pick which one do I care about the most, and I got to figure out how to persuade somebody to feel that same way about it, or at least start them in that direction. And I think that's the crux of what she had to say there, and I do believe in it. I sure do.
Changing minds for the better of all.
Yes.
I love it. Gay Hansen, Secretary Treasurer of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. That's IFPTE.org. Just one of many women making history during March, March being Women's History Month. You take care, keep up the fight, and keep in touch. Okay, Gay?
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, my friend. Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Keisha Bird, one of the many women of steel, and she'll talk about it next right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians, as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Are you looking for a new healthcare partner for your union members? Let Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield be your champion, making sure your members live their healthiest lives now more than ever. It's important to have a partner you can trust, one who understands the unique challenges unions face. Anthem provides a variety of options to meet your organization's needs and helps you control costs without sacrificing quality of care. For more information, visit anthem.com/labor and trust.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be a WF Union podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome to the show, Keisha Bird. Keisha is an active member of Steelworkers Local, and I hope I get this right. It's a long number. 10-00086, and this would be...
Got it.
I got it. Good, good. Out of Norristown, Pennsylvania, Keisha serves as the Women of Steel Coordinator for District 10. Keisha Bird, welcome to America's Workforce. I have to ask you, what's with all those numbers in the local? Do you have an answer to that?
We'll just say that there's so many different locals that a couple of numbers had to be added.
Okay. Good answer. Well, this is part of our series here. You know, March is Women's History Month, and Keisha is making history like so many women in organized labor. And that's exactly why we decided to bring her to the podcast today, because she's been doing a great job organizing, and she's done a lot in the community. We're going to touch on all of that. But Keisha, talk to me about your journey. It's important to know for all the female listeners, you know, what it means to be in a union and what you're able to accomplish because of that union being the steelworkers. So this is all yours, Keisha. Take it away.
All right. Well, that says a lot. I'm going to say that I came into the union about 25 years ago. I had 5 children. I did not know what a union was about, but I knew that the job that I was coming into was going to be a good job, to be able to provide for not just myself, but my children and others. And about, I believe, 2008, don't quote me on it, we became United Steelworkers. So when I started, we were PACE, and then we became United Steelworkers. And they had the Women of Steel program for us. Now, while I was in PACE, I really was not involved with the union, kind of really like sat back and just watched things that went on. I became a shop steward, very intimidated by men, because going to trainings and things like that, all you saw was primarily men, and they dominated everything, and you just went with the flow. But the steelworkers had the Women of Steel program, and I went to a conference in Canada, and it was eye-opening. I never had seen so many women in different nationalities, different areas, just in one place for the same thing. Not just women empowerment, but to be a voice, to say that, hey, we're here. Men just don't work in this atmosphere. We do too. And our lives are a little bit different than the men, because normally we're those homemakers, staying home, you know, with your family and things like that. But we're out in the workforce. So that was eye-opening. We came back. It was just not myself. It was a couple of other ladies. And we started our committee. I was not the chair. I was the co-chair at the time. And we went to a shop steward meeting and a local meeting, and I stood up on a chair like Sally Field in the one movie, and I was like, we're here. We're here. And it started, yeah, I stood up. I'll never forget it. And I was like, we're here, and we're going to let you know that our voices need to be heard. And it still needs to be heard. It doesn't matter where we started, how far we are, our voices still need to be heard.
We're here. I love that. Yeah, that's that was Coal Miner's Daughter. Great movie. Yes. Great movie. So, yes. So obviously that had an impact on it. You talked about when the, and we should point out too, Pace was dealing with paper and chemical workers, and then they merged to the steel workers, much like the rubber workers did back in the early 90s. Keisha, if you don't mind, can you go back to that time when you joined the steel workers and you said it was primarily male dominated, and obviously that was difficult for you as a woman. What got you through that? Was it other women around you? Was it the union? Can you speak to that part? I'm sure that would help a lot of our female listeners today.
So it was actually the program that was implemented by the steel workers, which is Women of Steel. Since we joined, they had a program where you could go and learn. So it provided the history of steel workers, what came into place, important women that were there, those type things that allowed us to take it back to our local and, you know, be able to say, hey, this is what we could do. And by learning at the Women of Steel committee meetings and stuff like that, I was able to empower other women for our local. So when I had initially joined, there was only one woman on the top board, and it continued that way. Actually, to be very honest with you, to now where you continue just to see about one or two people up in the main board, but we're on fire, and women are starting to say we need to see us up there. So it was really mainly about being educated. So I felt as though if we educate our women, we will be able to have more power and more say. Even if we're not on that board, we can still have the power. Sometimes, you know, it gets political up there, or, you know, a popularity contest. And a lot of times women have their children to take care of. But the importance for me was to be educated so that you knew your rights and to be able to have the voice, even if we're not sitting up there.
So you're now the coordinator for District 10 of the Steelworkers, the Women of Steel Coordinator. What's the game plan here? Because, well, as you know, we got a lot of politics. You mentioned politics. There's politics everywhere. I get that whole part. There's politics in unions. There's politics, obviously, dealing with races, Senate, Congress. You know, all, I don't want to get into all of that. But the bottom line is this. What's the game plan here for navigating through all the bumps in the road? Because you know there are many.
Very. So let me let you know, there's three of us at District 10, so I'm one of three, and I'm on the east side because our district is so big. So I have two other ladies that we're working, the women are still within the district. So I don't want to leave them out, so it's not just me. Okay. So, you know, numbers create power. So we're sitting down and we're looking at what we could do to better the different locals within the district. So coming out of COVID, like we talked about, the Women of Steel, so it's technically a leadership program that we did. So when I started, it was only a one-time leadership that we had. This time we have three different levels, hoping to go to a four and five to be able to educate the women what they could do in their locals. And coming out of COVID, we had a class, I want to say the class was about 80 women, which was the biggest that I've ever seen since I've been in the Women of Steel. There could have been possibly others that were bigger, but for the three of us, that was the largest class that we had. And we had a couple of ladies in there that were ready to be president of their locals. And by educating them and letting them know that, you know, they can be there and they don't have to sit in the back is one of the most important things for us. And that, you know, so we're looking for big things. We're looking for big changes. We're looking for a little shake up in some of the locals and seeing them women up there running. So that's the education and empowering them is where we have to start, because some people, some of the women feel as though their voices are still not being heard.
I hear you. Now, you know, Liz Shuler is the first female to head the AFL-CIO, and the steelworkers, of course, are members of the AFL-CIO. Has that been a game changer for people in your area, in local 10-0086 in Norristown, Pennsylvania?
Yes, it has. because she looks like us. So a lot of times you don't see someone that looks like you, and she's one force to be reckoned with. And being able to take that information back to the women in the local and all over, because women need to be heard all over, is empowering. There's someone that looks like us, and that's what is important for a lot of us women because, you know, again, you're normally in the background, and you normally don't see someone up in the forefront, but now we do.
Keisha, and we're speaking with Keisha Berg. She's an active member in the local that I just mentioned, Steelworkers Local in Norristown, Pennsylvania. I want to talk, if you don't mind, briefly about what you do outside the local in the community. And I was reading about recently a Christmas party for local families. I mean, there's a lot of hurt out there. And this is the part that doesn't get the media play that it should. Can you tell us what you've been doing over there in Norristown to help the those who are just, you know, they're struggling. There's a lot of struggle out there. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. So part of, so not just outside of here, but with the women is still part of our committee is to give back to the communities. So when we first started the Women is Still, we looked into the disadvantaged children with their families not being able to have Christmas. And we started there, and we provided the children with two gifts and a coat and a time out to enjoy just playing and being able to be alive. And our local president would be Santa Claus. So we started out doing bowling and, like I said, the two gifts and the coat and our president being Santa. I'm going to tell you our... trying to make that work, trying to make sure that we're giving those children and families something they never had is not an easy feat because we learned as we went along. So like when we started out, we didn't initially have two gifts in the coat. It was like we had this child name and we have a wish list. Well, you know, of course, some people go above and beyond. Some people do the bare minimum and stuff. But I will tell you that sometimes we need to look at a child because sometimes we think we have everything and we don't. But I will never forget one of our gifts that we gave to a child was only a football. We had a child that had like five other gifts, but this child had just a football. And it was the best gift ever to that child. He didn't cry. He didn't say that child. The other child had five gifts. He was ecstatic that he had a football. And it became a very humbling and eye-opening experience for not just myself, but the others in my committee and our local to that we now host up about 60 children, and some of them are full families. Some of them are, you know, just individual single parents and things like that there. But it's a humbling and eye-opening experience. And giving back is rewarding, whether it's during Christmas time or any other time, because the union has allotted us to have things that these families don't have. I will say that as a single mother, if it was not for the union, myself and my children would not be where we are to this day. So if I can give back and have others give back, they may not be at the job that I'm at with a union and stuff like that, but I want them to be able to know that there are people out here that have faced your struggle. There are jobs out here that if you can get into, you don't have to struggle. So this Christmas party that we do every year, we hope that when we're long going out of the local, that it will continue on.
Keisha Bird, active member, and I mean an active member, in Steelworkers Local 10-00086 out of Norristown, Pennsylvania. In wrapping up here, Keisha, I love talking to you. Your message to women. Now, March, again, is Women's History Month. You are one of many women making history. What would that message be, Keisha?
It would be to make sure your voice is heard. Don't sit in the back. Empowerment and educate and make sure that other women are getting what you're getting.
Keisha, thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce. You keep up the fight and keep in touch, okay?
I will. Thank you so much, and you have a great day.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the News Guild. That and more. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.